If we'd read it in the original, it would have said Jehovah Rapha, Jehovah, I am the Lord, your healer, Rapha. And it's, I heard someone say once that it's the law of first mention, where God reveals a bit more of his character by revealing one of his names, then actually the context of that first mention is quite important. And it's a very good study to do, to look at all the ways that God reveals his character through his name. You've probably heard of Jehovah Jireh, the Lord our provider. And there are lots of them, which is lovely. This is Jehovah Rapha. The context of this story, I expect you've all seen either the Ten Commandments or the Prince of Egypt or one of those films. And maybe you've known the stories through Sunday school or something like that, of the way that the Israelites were in Egypt and were in slavery. And they had been in slavery for 400 years. So that meant that there were generations of families who had children who were born into slavery, who had children who were born into slavery, who had children who were born into slavery. So probably 20 plus generations of people that had known nothing else other than that captivity and that hard labour. And if we had gone back to the beginning of Exodus and looked in the first chapter, we would have seen that it says there that the Egyptians made their lives bitter. So you can imagine that we're talking about generations of people whose lives were full of hatred, full of slavery, full of bitterness. And what a dreadful life I'm sure they had. And so when we look back, we can easily see what form of slavery the Israelites were in. It's not quite so easy to recognize the things that hold us in slavery. We tend to think of slavery as, you know, either the stories that you hear about the slaves that were taken out of Africa and sold to America. And, you know, we think of that as slaves, don't we? Or the modern slaves that we hear about. But what about our own individual slavery? And there's all sorts of things that can hold us captive. And the light came on for me some time ago. You know, I'd got into the habit of coming home from work and getting supper and sitting down, putting my feet up, putting the television on while I ate my supper. And what came on but Emmerdale and Coronation Street, because that was the time I was getting home. And there's nothing wrong with Emmerdale and Coronation Street, just in case you're worried. But what I had begun to discover was that I got hooked on the storylines. And so when I went away, I would record it. And when I came back, I had hours and hours and hours to catch up before I could even begin to watch the week that's current. So you're recording more, you know. And I would be spending evenings upon evenings watching Coronation Street and Emmerdale just to catch up, you know. And I got to the point where I went away at one point and I thought, this is stupid. There's nothing wrong with the television, nothing wrong with the programs, but it's beginning to govern my life, because if I go out, I have to record it, and then I have all this stuff stacked up and I'm not doing anything else, and it was just getting mad. So I decided I was going to stop it. But there are other things, aren't there, that hold us so insidiously, so quietly that we don't even notice it. And if I said to you, you know, what are some of the addictions that we can have these days, you could probably name all the obvious ones. But there are others. There are things that happened to us in the past that hold us captive too. We may not be addicted to them, but they can hold us captive because the memories, the trauma of it, holds us captive. Illness can hold us captive. Sugar can hold us captive. Habits. Things like anger. You know, it's very easy for children when they're 2 or 3 to learn that if they have a tantrum in Tesco's, lay on their back and kick their legs and get angry, that they get what they want, because the anger dictates. Or maybe not. Maybe not. But some do. Some do. And they grow up learning that the use of anger gets them their own way. And then they learn to use anger in slightly more subtle ways. Maybe the need to control. Maybe, as the Israelites were doing here, grumbling. That can be quite addictive, can't it? Jealousy, things like that, can hold us captive. And Moses appears on the scene, and he tells the Israelites that God is going to set them free. And then there's all the stories of the plagues, and Pharaoh resists, and it comes to the Passover, and God delivers them. He sets them free, and they leave Egypt, they go through the sea, and they're on their way through the desert. And we pick up the story at the point where it says that they have traveled for 3 days without finding water. Now, I don't think that that means that they had left Egypt 3 days ago. I think they had left Egypt days and days and days ago, and they had taken as much water as they could carry. Every pot and pan that they possessed was filled with water, and gradually they began to run out. Thousands of people, thousands of animals, and they've run out of water, and they're in the desert. And if you've been in the desert, you know how hot it is, how dusty it is, how arid, and to be without water would be a nightmare. The people of Israel had been set free. But the significant question is, were they free? It's like the door of the cage had been opened, but the bird is still sitting in the cage, even though the door is open. And then they come to Mara. Can you imagine the picture? All these thousands of people, they sight water in the distance, and they rush towards it. The relief, the elation of finding water. And then they get there. Can you imagine them on their knees all round the edge, you know, all lapping it up? And then they discover that it is undrinkable. And the hopes must have crashed down, must have been completely disappointing, frustrating. And I think to be undrinkable when you've been 3 days in the desert without water, it must have been just the pits, as it were. We come from Tunbridge Wells, right? We have water. We have spa water. Some people don't like it. I think it tastes like licking a rusty pipe myself, but not that I've ever licked a rusty pipe, but but it's what I imagine it tastes like. Does anybody come from Strathpeffer? Has anybody been there? Do you know where it is? It's in Scotland, and it's a spa town. And I was on holiday with my family up there some years ago, and we decided that we would visit Strathpeffer because it's famed for its water. Well, you could smell the water outside of the town because it smelt and tasted like rotten eggs, full of sulfur. Horrible. But if I had been in the desert for 3 days, I'd have drunk it for sure. So I don't know what Mara must have tasted like. I can't imagine. And what did the people do? They followed their generational habits, I'm sure, of 400 years, and they grumbled. They didn't grumble to Moses. They grumbled to each other. They grumbled against him. And I wouldn't have wanted to have been in Moses' shoes, really, at this point. He cries out to the Lord in verse 25. Moses cried out to God. And if you look up the word, the root of the word that this comes from, it means he thundered. He thundered to God. That tells you something of how he was feeling at that moment, doesn't it? He thundered to God for the plight of his people. And then, very God-like, have you ever prayed a prayer and then God shows you something and you think, really? And God showed him a piece of wood and said, throw it into the water. And he's got all these people looking at him. What's he going to do? How's he going to resolve this situation? And he goes across and picks up a piece of wood. You can just imagine what the people might be thinking. And he heaves it into the water. It's very interesting, you know, the root of that word, wood. What do you think wood means? Wood? Wood? Yeah, it means wood. But it also means timber. But it also means gallows. I'll come back to that in a minute. the effect of the piece of wood being thrown into the water was that it made the water drinkable. And so the people had their drink. And then God declares, I am Jehovah Rapha, I am the Lord your healer. The word Rapha, we could spend ages just talking about the word Jehovah, but I won't. But the word Rapha, that's huge, because it shows us God's agenda for healing, which is much bigger than any of us, I think, could imagine. Because it contains the meaning, healing national hurts. It's huge. But it also means healing personal distress. So it goes from the global to the individual. It also means to make whole, body, mind, and spirit. And it means to repair and to cure. All of that wrapped up in God's name. So he's revealing a facet of his character. And if we step back for a moment and look at the picture at what's just happened from a slightly kind of more distant perspective, we can see something else working out here. We can see that God is actually revealing something. Because if we think about the waters of Mara and think about mankind, and instead of the bitter waters of Mara, think about the bitterness of humanity, full of sin, pride, greed, wars, all the terrible things that go on. And what did God do? He chucked a piece of wood into humanity, but we call it the cross. Remember, it meant gallows? And so we could say the bitter waters of Mara were made sweet. The bitter waters of humanity were redeemed. And Jesus, who died on the cross, whose name himself means to save, to deliver, to rescue, becomes the fulfillment of Jehovah Rapha. Amazing, isn't it? And maybe we have our own waters of Mara. Maybe you're there now. Maybe you have been there. For sure, we will all be there. We all have our times of difficulty, frustration, disappointment, grief, pain, illness. We all take our turn at standing on the shores of the waters of Mara. And sometimes those things that happen to us in life can get stuck in us, can't they? And can cause us to become bitter and angry. There's a quote that says, the bitter heart eats its owner. That's a bit graphic, isn't it? The bitter heart eats its owner. And Joyce Meyer says this, living with bitterness and unforgiveness is like taking poison and hoping your enemy will die. It's like taking poison and hoping your enemy will die. That's how destructive it can be to ourselves. And you probably know the quote from Nelson Mandela, who, when he walked out of prison, said that when he walked through the door to freedom, he knew that he had to leave that hatred and bitterness and unforgiveness behind. Because if he didn't do that, even though he was out of prison, he would still be in prison. So Jehovah Rapha, the Lord our healer, with that huge agenda, globally and individually, is still our healer today. And so maybe if there is an issue of healing that you need in your life, it doesn't have to be physical healing, it could be an emotional healing. It's to be found in Jehovah Rapha.